This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
South Africans fought for racial apartheid to be recognized and criminalized at the international level. But gender apartheid has not been explicitly codified yet.
That was Nobel laureate Malala Yousaf comparing the Taliban's treatment of women and girls to apartheid, South Africa's former system of racial discrimination. Details coming up. Also, Zimbabwe's ruling party is angry over new visa restrictions on people accused of undermining democracy. And the DRC is preparing for presidential, legislative, and municipal elections in 2 weeks. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Nobel laureate Malala Yousafzai has made an impassioned plea for what she calls gender apartheid to be made a crime under international law. Speaking at an event in South Africa, Yousafzai called on the world to pay attention to what is happening to girls and women under Taliban rule in Afghanistan. Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
Malala Yousafzai, the Pakistani activist who survived being shot in the head when she was 15 years old by Taliban gunmen for daring to pursue an education, delivered the annual Nelson Mandela Foundation lecture in South Africa Tuesday, which this year marked a decade since the death of South Africa's first democratically elected president. The 26-year-old drew parallels between Mandela's long struggle against white minority rule and racial segregation under the apartheid regime in South Africa and the situation facing women in Afghanistan in the 2 years since the Taliban returned to power.
With Mandela's legacy in mind, I asked myself, what injustice is the world overlooking? Where are we allowing inhumanity become the status quo? The answer for me was very clear and very personal. The oppression of girls and women in Afghanistan.
Yousafzai, who won the Nobel Peace Prize aged just 17, decried the fact that other crises have drawn the world's attention away from the situation in Afghanistan, where girls are not allowed to attend secondary school and women are banned from working or even leaving the house on their own.
South Africans fought for racial apartheid to be recognized and criminalized at the international level, but gender apartheid has not been explicitly codified yet. That is why I call on every government in every country to make gender apartheid a crime against humanity.
Mandela's widow and women's rights advocate, Grasa Michelle, also spoke at the event.
Let's be very precise. This thing of men thinking that they have a right over the lives of women, this thing of them believing that they have a right over the bodies of women,
Yousafzai said the United Nations should adopt language on gender apartheid in a new Crimes Against Humanity treaty it is drafting. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The United Nations Human Rights Chief Volker Turk today said the international community must demand with one voice an immediate ceasefire in the Israeli-Hamas war. His comments come as Israel widens its offensive in southern Gaza, which has displaced tens of thousands more Palestinians and worsened the territory's dire humanitarian conditions. Hamas militants took about 240 Israelis and foreign nationals hostage on October the 7th when they attacked communities in southern Israel. About 1,200 Israelis died in those attacks. The Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry says more than 16,000 Gaza residents have died in the Israeli military response. The UN Rights Chief Turk also voiced concern over allegations that Hamas fighters committed widespread sexual violence during their October 7th attack. He called on Israel to allow his team to investigate. Turk's comments came amid mounting criticism of the UN over its limited response to the alleged rapes and other sexual violence committed by Hamas. Hamas has flatly rejected accusations of rape and sexual violence during the October 7th attacks as unfounded lies. Also today, families of Israelis held hostage in Gaza demanded more government action to free their relatives. Some freed hostages say the Israeli military operations in the territory put their lives in danger. Gender-based violence. Survivors and women's rights activists say several forms of gender-based violence, including physical assault and forced marriages, remains a huge challenge for women in many communities in South Sudan's Jonglei state. One woman says she was subjected to frequent beatings and denied food after she refused to marry a relative of her late husband. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
Widow Kwan Garang says her life changed for the worse after her husband was killed when fighting between government forces and those loyal to Vice President Riek Machar spread from the capital Juba to Bor in December 2013. She says her deceased husband's relatives forced her to marry one of their kinsmen, a practice she says is common in the Dinka community. Garang says she refused to be inherited, adding that her late husband's relatives subjected her to constant beating, verbal abuse, and even deprived her of food.
Right now, whatever I have is taken by force from me. Every time he demands money from me, whenever I refuse his demands, he starts beating me with a big lock. He constantly says I will kill you and nobody will ask me. When I think about the way he treats me, I wonder why, and it makes me think a lot.
Garang says when her late husband died, he left some property, including cattle, but her late husband's relatives confiscated her cattle and other possessions.
But now with my husband's relatives here, he does not allow me to know whatever belongs to me. He uses his power to intimidate me as I am a weak person. So he does not allow me to...
Teddy Shandia, a gender-based violence project officer with a national charity group, Interchurch Medical Assistance, says cultural norms in the area encourage the abuse of women.
The culture in this community has taken it as it was not a violence. To them, it was a normal thing, like for a man to discipline a wife. It is not something big to them at first. But now, men have also got the consequences of all that they are doing.
Chandia says Interchurch Medical Assistance is helping to create awareness about the dangers of gender-based violence, or GBV, and to encourage victims to report abuse.
GBV cases reporting in 2019, it was actually not there because people were fearing too much to report. They are so attached to the culture, and because of that cultural fear, they are not easily coming. So we started with a lot of awareness with my team. Because if you don't report this, some of these violence are so bad, like if rape cases is not reported within 72 hours, then other harmful things can happen in the life of the survivor.
Shandia says physical assault, psychological abuse, denial of resources and sexual violence are common in Jonglei. She says a one-stop center in Bor State Hospital offers gender-based violence survivors psychosocial, medical and legal support in the state capital Bor. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
The Democratic Republic of Congo is vibrating to the rhythm of the campaign and the run-up to the election scheduled for December 20th. Candidates in the presidential, legislative, and municipal elections are working hard to gain acceptance by voters, even though they are encountering a number of difficulties, including logistical problems and violent attacks. A supporter of Moise Katumbi was recently killed as the opposition presidential candidate prepared to hold a rally. Zanem Neti Zaidi has the details.
As the election campaign continues for the general elections this month, several candidates are facing problems making themselves known or even getting around the country. Joël Bill is one of two female presidential candidates. She says there are problems of movement within the capital as well as within the provinces, and also problems of visibility. If you are looking for advertising, for example, there aren't any billboards left in the city because, she says, one candidate has single-handedly requisitioned 600 of them. Bile was referring to President Felix Tshisekedi and his campaign's dominance on advertising billboards. A few days ago, Moise Katumbi's political party, Ensemble pour la République, or Together for the Republic, reported that DRC authorities refused to grant overflight and landing permission to aircraft for its candidate's campaign. His motorcade was attacked last Tuesday in Kindu, the capital of Maniema province, and one of his officials was killed. But Together for the Republic spokesman Hervé Diakese says the party refuses to escalate the situation. He says they are in a position to respond, but he says for the sake of democracy and the best interests of the people, and because they know the next president of the Republic, Moise Katumbi, is leading a campaign of national reconciliation, they are refraining from behaving in ways that are not in keeping with democratic behavior. Last week, six presidential candidates threatened to lodge complaints against the president of the Electoral Commission for irregularities surrounding the electoral process and against the Minister of Interior for failing to protect candidates. However, Peter Kazadi, Minister of Interior, rejects the accusations against him. He says that opponents have the right to come and say what they see as the shortcomings of the police officers assigned to their custody, but that does not give them the right to publicly accuse the Minister of the Interior of refusing to provide them with police officers. The election campaign has now entered a new phase with growing competition between the two main candidates, President Tshisekedi and challenger Katumbi. For VOA Africa, I'm Zane Mnetizaidi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheye Suhib in Washington. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party is reacting angrily to a new visa restrictions policy which U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced this week, aimed at people Washington accuses of undermining democracy in the southern African nation. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, where the ruling party is berating the United States for the latest move.
Lauren Socha, spokesperson at the U.S. Embassy in Harare, told VOA that the new visa restriction policy would affect individuals believed to be responsible for or complicity in undermining democracy. He said that may include manipulating or rigging the electoral process, de-enfranchising voters, restricting the work of civil society organizations, or intimidating voters.
Such acts might also include engaging in corruption, including bribery, that undermines the electoral process, interfering with the independent operation of the judiciary, or abusing or violating human rights in Zimbabwe. The visa restriction policy will apply to specific individuals involved in these acts, and it is not directed at the Zimbabwean people. The United States supports Zimbabweans' aspirations to have free and fair elections that reflect the will of the people and strengthen democracy, the rule of law, and the protection of human rights.
Zimbabwe's August general election was marred by delays and shortages of materials in opposition strongholds. Many observer missions, including from the Southern African Development Community, said the process fell far short of requirements of the country's electoral laws, as well as the regional blocks guidelines. Jonathan Moyo, a former government minister in Zimbabwe, says the new restrictions are meant to make citizens revolt against their government after the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act of 2001, known as ZEDERA, failed to do so. Then U.S. President George W. Bush signed into law the measure aimed at promoting economic growth and the rule of law.
An objective empirical assessment of this latest measure is really an admission, first and foremost, that ZEDERA has failed, that the Americans have become hopeless, the Americans, meaning the American government, have become jittery, and they now are resorting to legal instruments that were there in 2001. But now they think they can achieve what they've failed to achieve through ZEDERA.
Farai Mruiwa Marapira, a ZANU-PF spokesman, voiced agreement with Mwoyo.
As ZANU-PF, we are not surprised by this new activity by the American government. We all know that their intent on changing the government and all their machinations having failed in August, some tantrums they expected, and this is what is obtaining. We remain unfazed and we remain resolute. We hold on to the words of wisdom from our president, President Edi Mnangagwa. We are an enemy to none and a friend to all, and our doors are open.
Mwoyo says he doubts the new U.S. visa restrictions will have an impact. However, Promise Mkwananzi, the spokesman for the country's main opposition party, the Citizens Coalition for Change, is more hopeful.
We note the measures taken by the Americans against the authors and sponsors of chaos, illegitimacy and illegality in Zimbabwe. I think it is important not just for the American government, but as well as other governments, regional bodies such as SADC and others, to ensure that they put some disincentive against people who would want to undermine the will of the people of Zimbabwe and disrespect the voice of the Zimbabwean people, including, of course, those that are not in ZANU-PF, who are in complicit with the regime in undermining the wishes and the will of the people of Zimbabwe.
The opposition says it is hopeful that regional body SADC will call for fresh polls following the chaos which characterized Zimbabwe's August elections. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends? Breakout artists? New releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
As debate over loans and trade relations with China heats up in Kenya, the Chinese embassy in Nairobi is looking to boost cultural ties with Kenyans by launching food extravaganzas. Victoria Amunga has more from Nairobi.
At a hotel in Nairobi, Kenya's capital, dozens of people gather to watch this display of Chinese culture. This performance ushers in a food festival sponsored by the Chinese embassy and hosted by Kenya's China Teachers Association. President of SYNC International Education, Michelle Chang, says their goal is to promote Chinese culture and keep the relationship between Kenya and China strong.
This year, 2023, is the 60th anniversary of Kenya and China diplomatic relationships set up. So I think we should keep in touch more and more and closer and to become like good diplomatic relations within both countries.
Forging stronger ties through cultural events can also bridge language differences, says economist Eric Musau.
European countries generally have always had very strong ties, looking at the Commonwealth or America. The common language is always a big positive between Kenya and most of Europe as well as America. So for the Chinese, there's that gap, especially around the language barrier. They've been trying to encourage more Kenyans to study the language.
Chinese presence in Kenya has been growing over the years. Chinese companies have built massive projects in Kenya, like the standard gauge railway between Nairobi and Mombasa. At the same time, Kenya's central bank says the trade deficit between Nairobi and Beijing grew to $3.62 billion in 2022, up from $3.51 billion the previous year. Musau says the infrastructure is beneficial for Kenya, but the trade disparity is a challenge for diplomatic relations.
In terms of exports to their market, you're looking at just a couple of $100 million. So the balance of trade is really in their favor. And when you look at the structure of the economies and where, for example, Kenya wants to go, it's very unlikely that you'll ever have a very good overlap in terms of a balance of trade compared to, let's say, America, where exports and imports are almost on balance.
Balance is something that Steve Wakoli says he was missing in his life before he learned the Chinese language and martial arts like Kung Fu. He now makes his living teaching Chinese and performing martial arts.
I started receiving invitations from companies for performances. I went to schools like Chinese Confucius schools. I went to Kenyatta University, went to Nairobi universities for performance.
But Wakoli is an exception. Many Kenyans are uneasy by what they say is too much Chinese engagement in Kenya, especially in the retail sector. Trader Lucy Wanjiku explains.
Come over here.
She says, we used to buy clothing from China, but now they have their own store here, and what they sell is cheap. Our customers all go to their store to find cheap products. Because of the infrastructure projects, Kenya's debt to China stood at $6.3 billion as of March 2023, almost two-thirds of the country's total bilateral external debt. Analysts say cultural programs such as this food festival aims to ease uncertainty caused by what some Kenyans see as an unbalanced economic relationship. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
Around the world, people are marking the United Nations 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Help us mark the work to end violence against women by sharing your thoughts on VOA's English to Africa radio programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076 before December 10th. Tell us what is being done in your community to fight gender-based violence and tell us why this issue is important to you. That number again is +1 202 258 3076.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Keila Williams, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.